When President John F. Kennedy issued his famous challenge to ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country, many did. And so 3 months later, the Peace Corps was born, which has since hosted over 200,000 volunteers who serve their country's interests around the world. Today, all those volunteers lead us to ask, can one find peace in the Peace Corps?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 713th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends down there in Elias Caius who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Nikki James.
Today we're broadcasting live from the 31st Annual EcoFarm Conference in Pacific Grove, California. I'm talking with Gary Schlotz, who is a sector recruitment specialist for the United States Peace Corps. Well, Gary, where on earth do you find people who know enough about the right kind of agriculture to recruit into the Peace Corps?
I think that is a challenge. Ag and the whole food security has always seemed somewhat mysterious realm, like the Wizard of Oz. So we're always trying to find the best way to attract people, and our recruiters are always challenged by that. I look especially in the organic and low input areas, because the skills that are already within those realms are directly applicable to communities around the world. Now, there are other examples where it may be ag education or whatever. Then you look at a different source of potential applicants, maybe more in the traditional universities and colleges.
So if you're going to try to help somebody in Zimbabwe, for example, develop a viable food system for their country, I don't suppose you would go to the ag equipment show where they have these $300,000 combines, right?
Yeah, I think it's a very, very good point. It's probably not appropriate technology. Maybe someday it would be. But occasionally I will go to those shows because I will bump into groups and organizations that can be very helpful to Peace Corps. Maybe Peace Corps can be helpful to them. But I always look at a little less high-tech environment in which to approach potential applicants. And I have parents who talk about their kids needing to do something, and there may be some graduates to be, or individuals are sitting there and saying, hey, I'm 45 or 50 years old, and I've always thought about this. Maybe it's time for me to do something.
And, you know, yesterday here at EcoFarm, I was standing and talking with somebody at a booth, and a young lady came by who just graduated from Cal Poly San Luis Obispo with a degree in environmental science. And, well, the question was, what are you going to do now that you graduated? And she smiled, and she said, well, I'm not really sure, but I'm thinking about the Peace Corps.
Well, I think that those are the kind of people that I really desire to meet at events like this, because I'd like them to get involved in the Peace Corps application process. Because part of that process is that it helps discern whether an individual is really right for Peace Corps and Peace Corps is right for them. And it's designed to do that. So it's a process to apply and before you go overseas. And it helps clarify a potential applicant or potential volunteer's thought processes on what they want to do.
You know, I was having a conversation with Thomas Whitman, who's on the board of, president of the board of EcoFarm this year. And he is a Peace Corps volunteer. I think he was in three times. He did three tours of the Peace Corps, something extraordinary like that, in deepest, darkest Africa, as a matter of fact, down there. And when I was talking with him about what kind of person it really takes, he said, you know, you've got to be a self-starter. What does he mean by that?
I think that's really, you have to be a self-starter. You also have to be adaptable, and you have to learn to listen. And those are probably the keys. You have to be at, if you're in a project site, you have to listen for a while to find out what the problems are in the community or your host organization or whatever. And they have to learn to be adaptable to the situation. And you have to show some leadership. And I think that's one of the things that comes with a younger person who's 20-some years old, who's a Peace Corps volunteer. They'll actually hone their leadership skills in this process. And it isn't that they're thrown immediately in the fire, because you're working at the community level. So you do develop your leadership skills, and those subsequently pay off in the long run when you turn back to the U.S.
But, you know, not only the leadership skills, but I would assume that there would be a significant amount of salesmanship or salespersonship involved in becoming a Peace Corps volunteer, because you're thrust into a different culture, a different world, and people, you try to give people some direction, and they probably stand there and look at you for a while, right? So how do you go about selling yourself in that situation?
I think, I think it's a very good question, Michael, the word selling. I'm not so sure that it's selling. It's as much listening and marketing yourself. You don't want to go into a situation where you're sort of parachuted down and say, hey, I'm an American, I'm here to help you and save you, because these folks have had these problems for thousands of years that they're trying to deal with. So really what you're trying to do is, if you're selling anything, you're selling your trust in your confidence in your relationships as opposed to solutions. Because once that occurs, then you can solve issues that are at the community level.
So, Gary, 1967, John Fitzgerald Kennedy had issued this wonderful challenge in 1961. And 3 months later, the Peace Corps was formed. I almost in thinking about that, I imagined, you know, John Fitzgerald Kennedy issuing this command, and then all of a sudden, half the young kids in America are saying, hey, what can I do for my country? And then the Peace Corps came into being really quickly after that. I imagine there was quite a demand for something to do, and Sergeant Shriver was there to kick things off. And you came just a few years later, young man, joining the Peace Corps. Tell us a little bit about your experience.
Well, I think, that was, I think the John JFK's message, if it didn't directly impact potential volunteers, it was in the air and it was the environment of the time. And one did want to contribute to the country. I think there was also a period of service and introspection. So it was a self-searching time, but it was also a time of giving. And I think also what happens is that particular era of individuals, it just was the right time at the right place with the right group of citizens.
Where did you go?
I served in what was that? This makes me old because the country I served has changed its name. I've served in Ceylon, which is now Sri Lanka, and that's a little island country off the southern tip of India. There was about 70 in our group, and there were forestry people. I was a dairy husbandry specialist. I grew up in a dairy farm in Wisconsin.
Wait a minute. You're a dairy husbandry specialist, milk cows, and how many milk cows are there in Ceylon?
Well, actually, there were some large government farms. Milk was sort of a new idea in food. Everything was canned previously. But there were some large government farms that had some problems in productivity and herd health and breeding. So there were a number of cows. There were a lot of small farmers out there. They had one or two cows as well. But there was five or six in my group. They were dairy husbandry specialists. And our goal was to directly relate to increasing productivity. The challenge, always they say, is be adaptable if you're a Peace Corps volunteer. And I ended up getting placed on an 800-acre seed production farm with one dairy cow on it. So all of a sudden I have to think on my feet, and how am I going to handle this? And part of it was listening for a long time, and actually I ended up doing some seed selection work on this farm.
Well, isn't that what Thomas Whitman meant by you have to be a self-starter? Because how on earth can the Peace Corps train you for whatever you're going to face out there? Because the Peace Corps sending its volunteers all over the world, and you take a dairy husbandryman from Wisconsin, a young man who was raised milking cows, and all of a sudden you're in a country that doesn't know which end to milk. So you have to be adaptable. You have to be a self-starter. You have to take the situation in hand and figure out how to make something of it.
I think that's exactly true, and what you do is you seize the opportunities that are in front of you, and then you run with them. I remember I had friends who were active in the large government dairy farms, and they faced challenges that they had never thought of before as in regards to milk production and herd health and things along that. So, yeah, you have to be adaptable, and you have to go with the flow,
so to speak, right? So to speak, flow of milk in Sri Lanka. And when I think of the people that I know that were part of the Peace Corps, they're really similar to the people I know who successfully survived being in the military. In that, you know, you're a young person, you're thrust into this incredible situation, and you have to be adaptable. You have to be a self-starter. And if you can do that, you can do really well. But if you can't, you're in trouble. Does anybody get in trouble in the Peace Corps when they're thrust into, you know, being an 800-acre sheep farm with one dairy cow in Sri Lanka?
That is a good point. I think the difference between, I think, Peace Corps and the military is that it's less regimented, so that you're literally stuck out in could be 3 hours from the nearest capital city or 40 or 50 miles from the nearest other volunteer. So you really are out there alone, and that is a challenge, I think, for a number of volunteers. But they learn to adapt, they learn to be flexible, and that's what Peace Corps does in its application and processing, is it really works, and the training that occurs overseas, working with Peace Corps volunteers to help them learn to do these coping skills, I guess is what it is, until they feel very, very comfortable.
Thomas Whitman told a story about being, his specialty was mechanics and teaching people how to work with machines. And so he was in the Peace Corps in Zimbabwe or someplace out there in the middle of Africa. And his job was a truck would break down out in the middle of nowhere, and they would fly him out there with a box of tools and some parts and land him on the road in an airplane and then just leave him and they take off. So they had to fix the truck to get back. It was as simple as that. It is time for a break, so we're going to go back to Nikki James in the studio. Michael Olson here. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. We're ringing in on cell phone technology from Asilomar in Pacific Grove, California. Look out the door through the Grove to the Pacific Ocean. Absolutely beautiful. Talking with Gary Schloss about the Peace Corps. Can we find peace in the Peace Corps? Take it away, Nikki. Hey, we're back, folks. This is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here. Today we're broadcasting live from the 31st Annual EcoFarm Conference in Pacific Grove, California. I'm talking with Gary Schloss, who is a sector recruitment specialist for the United States Peace Corps. Today we're sitting at a table next to an open door. You look out the door through the groves, and there's the Pacific Ocean. Absolutely stunning today. The Peace Corps, 1961, President John Fitzgerald Kennedy issued the challenge, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. And 3 months later, by golly, they formed the Peace Corps to take care of all of these people who were asking what they could do for their country. Peace Corps has 3 goals: provide technical assistance to foreign nations, help those living in other cultures understand American culture, and help Americans understand the culture of other nations. Does the Peace Corps provide valuable technical assistance to foreign nations? What do you think, Gary?
I think that's a very vital question, and it is one of the 3 keys of Peace Corps. Yes, I think it does provide a technical assistance. In fact, that's one of the things that I think Peace Corps is assessing right now, is looking at the development aspect of Peace Corps being crucial to its success. And I'm one of those that, yes, I think that it does. It may not be the goal that you had when you stepped off the plane, you know, we're going to do this and this and this. But after you look back after 2 years, or somebody does another year assignment, they can look back with some success on technical assistance. Again, it may not was an original goal, and it may have been a whole different kind of project, but there have been some many, many positive aspects of technology.
Well, then you're looking for agricultural technology to provide foreign nations. And American, you know, when you think of the high technology of American agriculture with our incredible precision, you know, you go out here and look at any ag field, and it's almost laser-like in its perfection of how things are laid out. I mean, there's not a dirt clod out of place in 1,000 acres. So when you look at how we can be of assistance to developing nations, that, you know, that technology is kind of superfluous, right? It would almost be useless when you think about it. How do you go about crafting the technologies that you'll need to transmit to those foreign nations, that the developing nations that actually need the help?
Well, I think, you know, the answer may not be technology. The answer probably is agricultural know-how. And that's one of the reasons I look at organic events like EcoFarm and Low Input, because we're looking for agricultural hands-on experience. And it's analytical abilities, looking at a situation, how are we going to solve this problem? Now, it may not be a new piece of fancy-dancy equipment and GIS mapping, even though there are GIS projects in Peace Corps, But it can be just like, let's look at a new type of vegetable that's going to have resiliency, or it may have some market potentials that hadn't been thought of. And a Peace Corps volunteer working in a village and introduces two or three new varieties of vegetables suddenly is like, wow, this is really neat. And it turns on the village and they say, this met a need, and that can be an actual impact.
What about the development of farm-to-market infrastructure? You know, in much of the developing world, that's a tough one as well. Getting the roads, getting refrigeration, getting crops to market from where they're grown to where they can be consumed.
I think there really is a challenge, and I know in a number of countries, if I could apply back to dairy products, refrigeration is crucial here. You've got to get that milk, you've got to keep it cool so it's healthy. Then you have to process it. And a lot of times in countries, that infrastructure just doesn't exist. So what happens is you have to maybe shorten that whole process of production to consumer. Instead of looking at 200 miles away, you look at building markets across the other side of the mountain. I've been involved in international development for a number of years, and always the request is, boy, we just need to send our product to the U.S. and Europe because that's where it should be. In reality, they need to look to the other side of the mountain.
That's probably something they don't want to hear too, though, because the money is in the developing countries, the developed countries. If we can get our products there, we can make a ton of money, and then life will be grand. Except we might not have anything to eat, which is also a problem in the developing. Can you think of any good examples of people that you have recruited for the agricultural services of the Peace Corps and sent out there and their experiences?
Yeah, there's one that comes to mind just recently. I talked to a recruiter in the Los Angeles office, and she relayed back that her degree was in public administration or public policy, and her job was to go down and organize women's empowerment groups in this Central American country. The women there were uneducated, were at home working, had many children, the husband were gone, and so how do you organize women empowerment in that kind of environment? And she was getting frustrated, and all of a sudden somebody came to her and said, you know how to bake bread? And she said, yeah, sure, my mother used to bake bread. Well, we'd like to learn how Americans bake bread. So she taught them to make bread, and then they said, well, we'd like to make banana bread. Well, they made banana bread. It was a success. And then all of a sudden it was mango bread, and it was pineapple bread. There was all these local tropical products. Well, the women found out that they could make these. They could sell them in the community. They could sell them to the hotels. They could sell them to restaurants. And suddenly it became an economic impact for that local community. Now, the end result was women's empowerment occurred because of bread. When I talked to the volunteer, she just used to laugh about that. She says, you know, she says, I never envisioned that my mother's bread recipe would be the key for women's empowerment in her village.
And probably that is the key to empowerment, and that's that local economy you're talking about. And thus, the women who could bake bread, who learned how to bake bread, could sell the bread, and had some money, and therefore had the freedom, and they have the money, they have the power, and they could probably vote then too, right?
I think that's very true. I think economic development is crucial to the establishment of democracy, especially if economic development occurs on the local scene. To me, that's just crucial, and that's really what Peace Corps is involved with.
Well, you know, I guess the next point is whether the Peace Corps can help other nations understand the United States by the interaction of us going there and seeing them. And when you think about Americans what we have is a very loose-knit culture, you know, where just about anything goes. And if you look around the world, that's really not the case. In most of the developing world, they have these pretty rigid cultural structures, you know, that women are in one place and the men are in another place, and never the two shall meet except for certain other activities, you know. But by and large, it's a pretty ossified structure. And when you send a young American who's kind of anything will go into a foreign country, I suspect there is some interesting interactions that happen there. So we're going to pick that up when we come back from the break. Folks, this is the Food Chain, Mike Wilson. We're cruising along on cell phone power from the Sylmar Conference Grounds, where the 31st Annual EcoFarm Conference is taking place. We're with Gary Slotz, a Sector Recruitment Specialist for the United States Peace Corps, who's looking for people to serve in the Peace Corps and help other nations develop their technologies and their marketing with respect to food and agriculture. And he's looking for people who can do and want to learn how to. This is the Food Chain, Michael Olson. Take it away, Nikki. Welcome back, folks. Michael Olson here. We're talking with Gary Slott. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Gary is a sector recruitment specialist for the United States Peace Corps. His job is to find people who know a little bit about growing food and processing it and marketing it and selling it, and to take that knowledge and take it to developing nations of the world and give them a hand. And to date, since 1961, 200,000 people from the United States have young, old, middle class, everything, every kind of person has volunteered for the Peace Corps and gone overseas. And you think of, if you think about it, pause to think, it is got to be the most bizarre collection of imperialists the world has ever invented. I can't think of any other nation that has done anything like this, Gary.
I think you're exactly true. There is a volunteer spirit in the United States, which is unique to the United States. And whether it's church volunteers or Peace Corps volunteers, it's in our culture. And oftentimes they'll look and they say, why would you be doing this? You know, they just can't quite grasp that. I think maybe after a couple of years, they understand a little bit of volunteer spirit, that aspect of it, which in itself is a way of communicating some of our cultural values to other cultures.
Does it work, you know, for us to send people overseas to people get to know us a little bit better by sending these people overseas?
I think that really is true, and that's one of the three legs of Peace Corps, is that people in other countries get an understanding of who Americans are. One of the aspects of Peace Corps is they do spend pretty intense training on cultural aspects and language aspects and what have you. So you get some feeling of what culture is like that you're going to be placed into. But you're always going to find strange things or unique things about the culture. You have to be adaptable. You learn. And sometimes you find that how you do things in the United States is pretty strange in another country. And sometimes their values are maybe superior to ours.
In some respects, it's certainly easy to see that. What about you? What did people see when they saw you, a young man from Wisconsin, knew a lot about milking cows, and all of a sudden you're in Sri Lanka? What did people see in America when they saw you, Gary Slott?
I think you're a unique individual, and I remember there are a number of Peace Corps volunteers who will be on a scene or a site where they are the first American that the local community has ever met. And so they're learning about you and how you act. You really are an ambassador for your country. And so there you want to handle yourself appropriately, and you don't want to make a fool of yourself. And so that's part parcel of the deal. But, you learn from them, and they learn from you, and they'll be very direct and ask you questions of how you do things and why you do things. I was able to go and went to the U.S. Information Agency and actually got movies, and I brought them out to my farm and showed them to we had probably 100 people gathered out in the barnyard once every couple of weeks, and I showed movies, and they were awed about the equipment and the land and all those kinds of things. So I brought a little bit for that perspective, but they're always interesting. Why do you Americans do things as you do? And it's that dialogue that's really a benefit, I think.
Well, when you think about it, sending somebody who's used to a very posh life comparatively here in the United States. I mean, we wake up to running water and lights that actually light. What is it like for us then when we go find ourselves in these very primitive conditions? And how do people see us reacting to those their conditions that they consider normal?
Yeah, I think that's really true. I mean, my food conditions in Sri Lanka, I was lucky to be on a government farm. And actually had a very pleasant place to stay. We only had electricity from 5 in the evening till about 10 in the evening, and the next morning from about 4 in the morning till 8 in the morning, because it was generator equipped. So things like, we had a refrigerator, but the refrigerator didn't do much good when you didn't have electricity to run it. So you ate a lot of vegetables and fruit and things along that line, and after a while you learned to sit there and you sort of crave a hamburger, and it wasn't available. So you know, I think they sort of watched you eat, and that was part of their life. They ate gourd curries and potato curries a lot, and after 7 days of potato curry, I got a little tired of it. You learn to adapt, and you go with the flow.
Well, and I guess that's one of the things we would learn then as Peace Corps volunteers, is just how remarkably adaptable we can become. And that's significant for a young person, especially. I think of a young lady who's thinking about volunteering for the Peace Corps. She would have to become pretty adaptable to survive. What about those that don't survive? What happens to them?
Well, I think Peace Corps goes through a great process of reviewing an applicant's background and attitude and approach. I know there's a real strong interview process where they ask you some pretty direct questions about your motivation and your adaptability. And from that, they're able to screen a number of individuals out early on. That is not to say that every Peace Corps applicant who goes overseas is going to be 100% effective in this area. But Peace Corps is there to help make it happen. And if somebody is a little frustrated or whatever, they can talk to other Peace Corps volunteers. They can talk to Peace Corps staff at headquarters, and they help them work through that process.
Can do, right? Well, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, I'm going to ask Gary the big question, which I think is, can one find peace by serving in the Peace Corps? This is the Food Chain, Michael Olson, Gary Slott. Today here at Eco Farm in Pacific Grove, California. Absolutely beautiful day, and the question of the day is, can one find peace by serving in the Peace Corps? We will be right back. Take it away, Nikki. Welcome back, folks. Final segment. So much to talk about. Boy, I think I could sit here and talk all day with Gary Slott, who's the Sector of Recruitment for Specialists for the United States Peace Corps. And Gary's recruiting people to go out into the world and help them learn how to grow, process, market food in the developing nations of the world. And my big question today in thinking about this is really, how can one find peace by serving in the Peace Corps? And I think of all of the people that I know who have served in the Peace Corps, and they all seem to have something a little special about them. I think the first Peace Corps person I met was one of my publishers in San Francisco, Ron Turner, a very special man who always has this wonderful smile about him. And another good friend of mine, who is the president of the Eco Farm Board of Directors this year, Thomas Whitman, also is that kind of person. So, Gary, what about it? You know, what about you? Did you find peace by serving in the Peace Corps?
Well, I think that's an excellent question. And one of the things that I found is, just as you found, is that there are a number of individuals who are among the 200,000 who've been Peace Corps volunteers. And they all seem to have, as you said, a certain smile, a certain knowledge, a certain self-awareness that only developed through their Peace Corps service and the connectivity to other Peace Corps volunteers and being part of that larger picture. And indirectly, I guess maybe that's what it is that is the kind of peace that one achieves through service. Tom, I met him at the meetings here yesterday, and he came up, and he didn't have to say much at all, and I quickly recognized he was probably a Peace Corps volunteer. So there's sort of a unspoken communication that exists out there. There are Peace Corps volunteers, or current Peace Corps volunteers all over the world, from congressmen and senators all the way to taxi cab drivers, and they've all done their thing, and there is a camaraderie that develops, and I think that, in a way, that can be defined as a peace, because they've learned, they've accomplished something, they've traveled the world, they've seen the world, they've become much more knowledgeable and aware of who they are and what the world is all about.
I think in terms of watching the end of a marathon or a distance race, a long-distance run, and watching the people come across the finish line and see the wonderful smiles on their faces, smiles from ear to ear, like they're completely filled with endorphins and they're happy to have accomplished something and they just feel so good about themselves, and that must be what you pick up. I think I got it, too, from serving in the military. You know, you go through something extraordinary and you come out the other end in one piece and you feel pretty good about having accomplished something.
I think that's really true. I think with Peace Corps, the endorphins probably come a little bit later, because you may have been out 100 miles from the nearest other Peace Corps volunteer community, and suddenly you're back in downtown Los Angeles and or in, in Boise, Idaho, and you walk into a grocery store and you're overwhelmed with the fact that there are 30 kinds of bread and 94 kinds of cheese, you know. So there is a cultural transition that occurs for Peace Corps volunteers when they come back. But the endorphin kick in, which is, I never heard quite used that way, but I think that occurs through time in life. And as one gets looks back, I met an individual yesterday who served back in the very early 1960s. And she'd only done one assignment, but when she talked about it, I guess that endorphin rush was still there. It's still working.
I guess that's the same way it was in the military. You know, when you get out, but and then some years later you go, goodness, that was a wonderful experience, and I'm glad to survive it. So how do people volunteer to serve in the Peace Corps?
What I really, it's much different from back in my day, right now, thank goodness to the web, I would think anybody who is in any way interested, young, old, we have three women right now who are 80 years old, so don't just count the fact that I'm too old to serve, but just go to the website. It's www.peacecorps.gov. The website is extraordinarily helpful. There are even sections on it. There are video clips. There are blog notices. There are how-tos, and there's a button on there called Apply Now. That doesn't mean that you're locked in, but what it does is get your names and basic information into the system, and recruiters will actually work with you to help you process through the system and determine whether you're appropriate and that you've got the skills that are needed.
What's the website?
www.peacecorps.gov.
Thank you, Gary Slotz, Sector Recruitment Specialist for the United States Peace Corps. Thank you all for tuning in today. Really appreciate your riding along with us through some technical difficulties, but it's been fun, and maybe I'll just go join the Peace Corps, talk my wife into it.
Love you.
Thank you. Take it away, Nikki.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.